Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Governor Tony Evers says without changes to the GOP shared revenue bill, he will veto the proposal. We explain whether there's room for compromise. Plus, how Milwaukee leaders are responding to the wide-ranging proposal that restricts local control. And the Joint Finance Committee kicks off the budget crafting season by removing hundreds of policy proposals backed by Democrats. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 5th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Jared, let's start this week with some new laws that were signed, in, or some bills assigned into law by Governor Tony Evers. We've talked a few times about reckless driving and carjacking on the show. Well, now it's official. Earlier in the week, Governor Tony Evers signed more reckless driving bills into law that would increase penalties on first offenders, and it would increase penalties as well on those who carjack. So it would raise fines on those. And this kind of comes a day after the Milwaukee Common Council also adopted a new ordinance based on another new law aimed at tackling the problem. So we've seen kind of city leaders and the state take action on this measure. Let's first just take a listen from Governor Tony Evers and others who were at the press conference talking about how they believe this will make a big difference.
According to the DOT, about 2,900 people are injured by a reckless driver every year. And in 2021, reckless driving killed 113 people. The bills I'm signing today will continue this work by increasing penalties for reckless driving and carjacking and creating a new carjacking section of the criminal code. But we can't stop here. I've been proud to direct more than $100 million of our federal relief funds toward supporting violence interruption, crime prevention, and community safety efforts statewide, including here in Milwaukee, where we directed some of those funds to prevent reckless driving through environmental design and upgrades to local roads. And moving forward, there are several provisions in my 2023-25 biennial budget that would continue this work in a real and meaningful way. And that includes increasing the number of positions for the State Patrol, helping ensure students have access to affordable driver's education, and improving the design and construction of our roads.
So this was in addition to some other bills he signed centered around reckless driving, and they were both bipartisan. So this were some of the first actions that the governor took. He also signed some other kind of technical bills earlier in the week. But this is kind of a bigger picture that Republicans and Democrats have been working on to try and tackle the crime issue in Milwaukee and other surrounding counties as well.
They actually got something done in a bipartisan way.
Right.
Worth noting that at the news conference, you both had LaTanya Johnson, Democrat from Milwaukee, and Bob Donovan, Republican from Greenfield, praising the coming together of the two sides to pass a bill. So maybe there is hope yet for this session that there'll be bigger compromises down the road.
All right. Now let's move on to other happenings in the week. There was a new committee that was created by Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu that's caused a little bit of controversy and mainly just backlash from Democratic leaders and other Democratic lawmakers. So the who he appointed to the committee is kind of the reason behind this. So LeMahieu appointed Senator Dan Knoedl, who was just recently sworn into the Senate, to lead the Shared Revenue, Elections, and Consumer Protection Committee. Now, Knoedl, who was sworn in last week, will take over election oversight and consumer protection issues, which is a role previously held by Senator Dewey Strobel. So why this is an issue is because Knoedl in the past is a kind of a staunch Trump supporter. He also believed that the election was stolen, so he was kind of in that one lane. So Democratic Senate Minority Leader Melissa Agard called him unfit for the office. About a day later, Knoedl sent out a statement kind of saying why he was qualified to chair this committee, because he said because of his election reform legislation and recognition of election irregularities. He specifically pointed to a bill that was introduced and didn't really go anywhere that would ensure only U.S. citizens would vote. We also saw an attempt to do a constitutional amendment on that as well. But this is kind of the main sticking point of the, I guess, the political rhetoric around this, of them going between each other and the reasons why.
So I don't know their shades of General Branch in this appointment. So remember, Robin Voss appointed Janelle Branchon to chair the Assembly Elections Committee last session. She then took that committee and used it as a platform for conspiracy theories the entire session until Robin Voss pulled her off of that, in part because she endorsed his opponent in the primary. Knodel's not necessarily in that vein. Knodel's kind of quote-unquote sin to some Democrats is that he signed a letter in 2020 asking then-Vice President Pence to delay certification to allow for a chance to explore possible irregularities. He did say during the campaign for the special election for the seat that he won that, you know, Joe Biden is the president, those kinds of things. The bigger question is, what's this going to be used for? Who else is going to be on it? Now, if you stack it with other people who have got maybe some, you know, maybe some ties to conspiracy theories about 2020 or complain about the election being stolen, and you've had a bunch of election bills, that would be a cause for some concern from some people, right? But what are Republicans going to do election-wise this session? Right? They did a bunch of things last session. They all got vetoed. They don't seem intent to try and waste time with bills that aren't going to get through. So if you don't have a lot of bills going to that committee, there's not going to be much more than this kind of initial dust-up over him being appointed. Right. So that's one thing I'm watching for about this. Also worth noting that there's been some shuffling of committee assignments because Republicans now have a two-thirds majority in the Senate. So they're reworking committees to reflect the fact they have this big of a majority. So some Dems are being moved around a little bit. It's just kind of interesting to note that you have the first supermajority in the Senate since 1977 when Dems had it. Now Republicans say, look, we run the show with this big a margin. We're going to have it reflect the margin that we have.
Right. And also, there was a big, topic in this committee, shared revenue, which mm-hmm. we're going to get to later in the show, as that has been an ongoing negotiations on that package that we'll talk a little bit later. All right. Also, speaking of Knodel, since he was sworn into the Senate after leading the Assembly, his seat is open. So Governor Evers called for a special election to fill the Assembly District 24th, which is vacant. So he ordered a special election to be held in July, specifically July 18th. Primary will be held on June 20th if necessary. Nomination papers for candidates must be filed by 5 p.m. on May 23rd. And the two candidates so far is GOP Ozaukee County Supervisor Paul Melotok and Dem Bob Tatterson, who's a retired engineer who got about 40% of the vote against Knodel in November. So some familiar faces who are vying for the seat.
So we talked about the 8th Senate District before going into this election in April. We kept saying this is not a competitive seat in normal circumstances. This Assembly seat is one of the least competitive pieces of that Senate seat. It is really, really not competitive. So, but you have a July special election. Who's going to turn out? Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on? The Democrat, he's run before, but look, he got 38%. That's not an indicator that he's going to be a real threat to win that seat unless it's super low turnout, something really drives people on one side, not the other. But for the most part, I think Democrats are just watching this seat and it'll go, okay, you know, we got something to pay attention to, but it's not going to make or break the majority in the Assembly. It's not a competitive seat. So I don't know if it's going to hold out a tension between now and July when they actually go and vote in that
race. Right, because we knew in the Senate race, of course, that seat was pretty up for grabs in a sense because there was a lot of money invested into it. The Democrat who run, Jody Habesh-Sidkin against Knodel, came very, very close. But there's no real consequences if, you know, Republicans win the seat at all in the Assembly. It's
no
not
Supreme
a dramatic
Court,
shift.
No yeah. Supreme no Court race to drive turnout. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, really, you've got to be passionate turn out for an Assembly seat in July to vote.
It's prime summer season. People right. are busy. Family vacations, a lot right. going on. But definitely we'll keep tabs on it on this show. All right. Also this week, the UW system is changing some policies specifically related to diversity, equity, and inclusion statements. Those are things that new employees typically sign if you're going to work in the UW system. Well, UW system president testified to lawmakers and held kind of a pre-presser before even testifying to lawmakers on Thursday that he's announcing that they will no longer have new hires sign on to these statements. Now, there's a bigger story attached to this, JR, because this decision was announced by Rothman after Assembly Speaker Robin Voss threatened to cut state aid to campuses. And this is also a trend that we're seeing with Wisconsin Republicans and Republicans nationwide working to close campus diversity offices. So Rothman, during an informal hearing about DEI statements and just policies on campus, made this announcement and kind of defended his decision that's basically saying, you know, regardless of this practice, he believes that it's tied to politics. We're seeing national Republicans, like I said, talk about this on the campaign trail. It's kind of a larger effort, and he wanted to remove the politics on it, and he didn't want it to impact people applying for the UW system.
So if you look nationally what's happening with the Republican Party, it is becoming more populist and less college educated. That makes college campuses that much easier of a target for Republicans, because the base there is that, well, I didn't go to college, and well, I don't see the point of these guys going there and being indoctrinated by the liberal woke mob, right? That's all the language you're seeing. So one, you have an easy target. You have a base that buys into the argument that this is not a good thing. And two, there is also this undercurrent in the Capitol among Republicans that the college campuses are making it too easy for Democrats to vote. College kids are turning out in big numbers. They are voting largely Democratic. They are not the reason why Janet Protasiewicz won in April, but you look at the wards on campuses, and they were like 80, 85% for Protasiewicz in the race against Kelly. And so Republicans are going quietly, we don't like this. They're making it too easy to vote. It's causing issues. Wisconsin had the highest turnout among people aged 18 to 24 last fall, probably helped Tony Evers, gave a boost Mandela Barnes. So there's that piece, the political piece of like the grinding the teeth of like, we don't like what they're doing over there. And thirdly, this is coming as we're getting ready to take a whack financially at UW. So if you look at the budget, and these DEI positions, they're about 185, something like that. The money that goes into it, you can whack the money piece of it. You can't kill the position. So what I mean by that is, it's called position authority. So the UW-Madison has its own position authority as the system. So lawmakers can't say, you have to cut these jobs. You can say how many jobs you could have, I think, or something like that. But you can't say, cut those 14 positions here or those 15 there. So you can't eliminate DEI, but you can take money out of their budget. And that's what we're looking at, is that there's going to be a whack of some sort in this budget process, UW-Madison, well, to the system, because they're unhappy, and this is a bigger part of a bigger issue that kind of goes back to politics and a national kind of movement that's going on right now.
Right, and this also came about a time when there's been recent headlines, not good ones, happening at UW-Madison campus, sure, specifically, of a student saying racial slurs on a video that went viral. So this kind of had a lot more attention on it this week because of recent events that happened. There's also something that's happened at Whitewater, so just, this has kind of been a series of things and kind of putting on the national spotlight, like you mentioned.
And if this from Rothman is to placate Republicans, I don't know it's going to work.
Right.
To stave off the financial cut.
Right.
We have had a series of budgets before Republican lawmakers where they have either held funding flat for UW or cut it, even though we've had pretty good budgets, fundraiser numbers-wise, for a long time. We have a huge pot of money right now. They're not going to get a whole lot of it. Unless, and they may even give up some, this is all said and done, this process.
And it's not easy. I mean, it wasn't even easy for former UW System President Tommy Thompson, who had a great relationship with many top Republicans as a former governor, but he still had to do some convincing to get what he wanted, and it's ultimately up to joint finance.
Look at the presence UW's had lately. So Ray Cross was supposed to be able to speak the language of Republicans, right? Like, he was somebody who could go in there and win them over. He held a news conference after the vote on the UW budget, one budget, saying, I got to get kicked in the shins in this process after all the work he put in to try and win them over. Tommy Thompson, former Republican governor, who helped shape Wisconsin dramatically while he was in that office, couldn't convince them. Rothman comes from the private sector. He's not an academic. Mm-hmm. He was a law firm partner. It was a nod toward, okay, we have a Republican legislature. This is a guy who maybe can go speak their language and maybe help win them over, because he's going to talk about the private sector. He's not succeeding either. There is just, the relationship between the Capitol and Bascom Hall is as bad as it's been my time being here. There is some real angst at UW about what's going to happen in this budget process.
All right, and stay tuned, because we'll be keeping tabs on Joint Finance as well, who is restarting next week, meeting on Tuesday and Thursday as things keep getting underway. All right, let's also talk about other things that happened at the Capitol this week. There was a committee hearings. One we specifically want to highlight, another bipartisan bill that we like to talk about, is kind of seeks to reduce suicide trends. Specifically, it would target one industry, and I'm talking about gun shop employees. They would receive suicide prevention training. There would be grants that would be distributed under this bill, and they'd be allowed to also temporarily store customers' firearms under this bill. Now, this has been previously introduced. There has been some tweaks to it. It's been authored by who was then at the time Representative Jesse James, who is now a senator, so he's bringing it back forth. The bill received a public hearing Tuesday and received broad support from gun right advocates like Moms Demand Action and many members on the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Prevention Committee. Let's also just hear from testimony from a woman who is a member for Moms Demand Action, who kind of talked about how this may have saved her son's life in a way. He was bipolar. He had a gun taken away from a routine traffic stop. And then what she said, he just got another gun so easily. And we'll also hear from the senator, too, about why he feels that this is important for, you know, employees to start speaking up if this were to pass. Let's take a listen.
While this legislation won't completely eliminate suicide in our state, providing gun owners with an additional layer of voluntary security during times of mental distress will save lives. Suicide is preventable. Let's treat it as such. We have to get more comfortable in asking these questions. I do it as a law enforcement officer. I have to ask people, are you planning on killing yourself? And we have to be comfortable in asking that question because it's the reality of life and death. So I think it's very appropriate for us as human beings to hold each other accountable.
Half of all suicides in Wisconsin are by firearm. Without intervention, irreparable damage is done. I'm a living witness to the damage it causes. It has to change. Please let my son's death make a difference today. I do not want another mom or dad to suffer the same unimaginable pain of losing their child to suicide by gun.
So when I asked Senator James, you know, what happened to this bill last year? Well, the main kind of sticking point in which he suggested is because of the funding that comes with it. It is asking for $150,000 to pay for these grants over the biennium. Before, it was just, you know, a funding mechanism, not through the budget. But this time, he's specifically say he's working with Joint Finance, asking them, and he will be, you know, trying to add this into the state budget. Also, you know, it really just depends how much, you know, lawmakers want to invest. This is a mental health aspect of that. But, you know, they don't grant everyone's request. So it's just something that we'll kind of keep an eye on for going forward. All right, now we're going to update to a lawsuit that we've talked about on the show before, which is centered around the false slate of electors from 2020. And specifically, I guess the next chapter in this court hearing is removing a specific member on the Wisconsin Elections Commission from further proceedings. And the one I'm talking about is Republican Commissioner Bob Spindell, who has been taken out, who was actually one of the false electors. So Dane County Judge Frank Remedy said he will order WEC to rehear the complaint against Republicans who participated this back in 2020, and it will occur without Bob Spindell. Now, the rehearing will take place in a closed meeting, and it's unclear when the commission's decision will be made public.
So one thing to remember, the commission voted 6-0 to dismiss this complaint before. If you take Spindell out, it's just going to be 5-0. Although there will be a new clerk on the commission because the former Dem clerk has left, right? New one's on there, so maybe be at worst 4-1, but they've already heard the merits. They've already dismissed it. So it's not going to change this case dramatically, I don't get the impression, but this Bob's not going to hear it. And before the judge ruled, Spindell's attorney said he agrees without hearing this for the second time around. He's okay with stepping off of it, so it's not going to be a big deal, it seems like.
Yeah, and this happened last week, but just speaking of WEC, too, their plan about election integrity. They asked the Joint Finance to create some new positions to rebuild confidence in elections. That's what they kind of framed it as. It was killed last week by Joint Finance, too. So I don't think we got that on the show last week, but just wanted to mention that. As, like I said, we're kind of just keeping people updated on the whole budget process. Now let's get to the big question mark, JR, and that is about shared revenue. We heard yesterday from the Assembly Committee on Local Governments, they decided to not amend the current bill as is, which includes a series of provisions that the governor said, if you don't make changes to the bill right now, he promised to veto it. So what we heard from the committee chairman yesterday is that they're going to make amendments on the floor. We kind of thought that's what was going to happen, but we needed to hear from them first. So they quickly fast-tracked this out without making any changes. Democrats tried to move out a lot of the policy provisions that target Milwaukee. that didn't happen, that failed. But they didn't really stop Democrats from just trying to say, hey, this is going too fast. Why are we going to pass this and put it on the floor when we don't know what's coming? But basically, Republicans said, well, that's where we're going to have the process play out, and they have control over this process. So let's take a listen from the chairman and some Democrats trying to say, you know, we really think this is not the right way in their view of doing this.
There are no amendments today because there are negotiations still going on, and I don't believe it would be worthwhile to pass amendments where they are right now and then have to amend it again. So I expect there will be amendments next week when this hits the floor. Yes, it is a Republican bill, but your party did have a lot of input and suggestions and stuff. So on a bill this magnitude and stuff, I've learned over my 10 years here, you don't get everything you want, you get the best you can.
I've heard repeatedly that we are so excited about the leadership of County Exec Crowley and Mayor Johnson, yet we're going to tie one hand behind their back. If we are serious and we believe that this leadership can fix the problems that Milwaukee is facing, let's let them do it the way they can. This process was rushed. It was not ready. And frankly, this process is dysfunctional.
So we weren't able to get any details about what is going on with the latest negotiations. We know it involves Democrats, Governor Tony Evers, Milwaukee leaders, and GOP leaders. So we try to get some answers, but it's really unclear because it seems like things are changing every minute. And I can expect, sure, maybe it's one amendment on the floor next Wednesday when the Assembly's in, but we can see many more when it goes over to the Senate. Also, big question mark, JR, is the Senate even in support of the bill as it stands right now?
So, one, my calls suggest that the Senate does not have the votes, Republican votes alone, to pass the bill. Now, there's a, they call it the rule of 17. Republican majority leaders in the Senate have long had this rule, not a hard, fast one, but a general rule that you must have 17 GOP votes to pass anything to take the floor. They do not want to empower Democrats to have to help them pass a bill because it empowers the minority to shape the bill. There have been some exceptions, but for the most part, that's the rule. If you put this on the bill, this bill as is right now on the floor of the Senate, I don't know you get 17 votes unless Devin Lemmy, the majority leader, really twisted arms hard to get people on board. There are concerns such as, all right, I'm out from rural Wisconsin. Why should I help Milwaukee, right? What's my incentive? There are lawmakers in the Milwaukee area going, this is kind of a tough one. And there's a general kind of philosophy from Republicans not to raise taxes. You are enabling Milwaukee to raise taxes. That's a tough pill to swallow. So what can you get Evers to give in on to make you swallow one of your kind of major philosophies, right? What's a big give from Evers? That's a big question. So, Assembly's gonna change this bill. What, we don't know. Could it be just the means of effort requirements for a police member? You have to kind of keep your effort for law enforcement on this bill as it is right now. To show you're meeting that effort, you can do one of several things. Keep spending the same on police, same number of police officers, or the same number of citations or arrests for breaking local ordinances. Well, Republicans said, maybe we didn't really intend that whole like ordinance thing or the arrest thing, citation thing to really be what it looks like. We're gonna look at that a little bit. So that might be changed. But what else big might change? I don't know. I think my impression is Republicans feel like the ones who negotiate this, we put this together. This is our bill. We put it together, we're happy with it. But what do you have to add in for Republican senators to get on board? Because the fence over in that house is, well, I didn't really shape that bill. You put this in there, which I like, but I'm not sure that I'm really there yet.
Yeah, and so, where's Governor Evers at? He, of course, we don't know what amendments are coming, but he's at the table here, mm-hmm. and I'm sure his staff is as well. You know, it was last week that he said, I don't like a lot of the provisions, but he was never really specific. So is it the policy proposals that he's vetoed before? Is it restricting local health officials' ability to shut down a business? Is it putting SROs, school resource officers, back in schools? Who knows? Or is it just bigger picture? Or because it's all going to be a give and take approach. I mean, everyone wants to get this done. But one thing that I think you and I have both heard is that Milwaukee leaders aren't really complaining about all the list of requirements that target them, which I just named a few. They're only really just a little hesitant if this referendum to raise the city and county sales tax would even pass in the first place, because we know if not, I mean, they can go bankrupt and then it can have a trickle effect across the entire state.
So we've said this before. The mayor and county executive have been part of the negotiation the entire time. they seem willing to take these provisions about Milwaukee because they need that money, right? No money, they don't have a solution otherwise. So that's a very big part of it. Evers called for a clean bill, no referendum. That's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm watching for is, what is there anything beyond a small tweak, the bill before it goes to the Assembly? And then two, is anything added in by the Senate and then sent back to the Assembly after they get a hold of it?
It could be a quick session day on Wednesday, or it could be a very long session day. And maybe lawmakers are back in session on Friday. Let's hope not. We just never know, because this can have very many last-minute changes. Now let's get to stock picks. We've got about 5 minutes left. Rising this week is a bunch of new Evers appointees, but a lot of familiar faces. Yeah.
So what's happening here is you're seeing Evers, his grip on these boards kind of tightening in terms of like majorities. He's got several appointments to the Tech College Board. This week we have Alex Lazary for one, Robin Voss. Some of you are not happy about it, kind of complained about it, likened it to Evers appointing Sarah Galuski, Secretary of State. It's kind of a political thing. It's not a paid position, Tech College Board. They really don't do anything that's going to really bolster Alex Lazary politically, but, you know, got the appointment. But you're seeing the DNR Board, others, Regents, bigger Evers majorities, means more Evers policies getting through these bodies as they work through the system.
All right, and let's go to Mix this week, which is focusing on Wisconsin's presidential primary, and still this big question mark about when DeSantis is going to throw his hat into the ring, but he was also just in Wisconsin this past weekend.
So look, he's basically in, that's why he's in Wausau last weekend for this Marathon County GOP dinner. In talking to people, we have this kind of interesting dynamic in Wisconsin where we typically don't matter early, we can matter a whole lot late. And so the Republicans are going to meet next month in La Crosse for the state convention. I don't anticipate seeing Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump flying to La Crosse to appear at the convention and speak. You think it'd be a prime time to go do it, but La Crosse logistically is hard to get into and out of for national people, lots of things like that going on. Where we matter though is after Super Tuesday. If there is not a clear, somebody hasn't clinched the nomination, there's this window in April where we matter, where we can be either a death punch for somebody or a second win for somebody. It's happened before. Remember back in 2016, it was kind of the last stand of the anti-Trump people. Cruz won Wisconsin. It propelled him forward. Then he crashed and burned later on. So what I'm saying is, look, don't get too excited about Wisconsin just yet in the presidential primary process, but wait and see post-Super Tuesday. It can be really important come next spring.
All right, and falling this week is the GOP Senate field.
So we talked about how narrow the field could be next year. Is Tammy Baldwin really vulnerable? I know she's on these lists for being like the top 10 most likely to flip seats. But Mitch McConnell did an interview with CNN and said basically his top seats to watch are West Virginia, Ohio, Montana, Pennsylvania. Didn't
Skipped
mention
over
Wisconsin.
Us.
Yes.
Yes.
And when Wisconsin brought up, said, well, I didn't mention Wisconsin. We'll see how the primary goes. Look, here's the deal. If you're not invested in Wisconsin before the primary, you're probably in a bad spot, all right? It's going to be a very expensive race, Baldwin's a very good fundraiser. But there's this dynamic for Republicans nationally of they want Mike Gallagher to run. They think he's the best candidate. He hasn't said no yet, but he's not said yes in any way, right? He's still kind of like, well, I'm focused on this. If they get Gallagher, the dynamic changes. Tom Tiffany, he's been making noise about running. He changed his website this past week, you know, got some intention, like, what's that all about? When I talk to people, they're like, well, they think Tiffany's going to run wants to run for governor in 2026. He's like raising his profile, raising his stock, get some attention. Okay, so because he only raised $37,000 the first quarter of the year. That's not really what you do if you're going to run for U.S. Senate. He still might do it, but people are skeptical. Scott Mayer, we've talked about these names before. Mm-hmm. Nothing changing, but what is important here, what we're talking about, is because the Nash folks are basically in the message of we're not really invested in Wisconsin because it's not there yet. Now, Steve Daines, the Montana senator who chairs NRSC, he was Gallagher, interviewed the Journal Sentinel this week. So it tells you if Gallagher gets in, it could change the dynamic. But as I've said, right now, with what we have for a field, the national folks aren't that invested in Wisconsin. Of course, the caveat is they didn't really invest in 16 or 18 either. They left Ron Johnson by himself until the very end. In 18, they really helped Leah Vukmir. Now in 22, they helped Ron Johnson, second time around. But they're just not really invested in Wisconsin right now.
All right. Maybe that will change. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks so much for joining us this week. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association. bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.